I be on these mile and hen dogs, and now Scott Caxmark got a problem with me.
I be on the mile.
Locked On Equals exclusive.
Welcome to a special Friday edition of Locked On Eagles, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon Breaking Football. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. As always, I'm joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day, DJ Frog with Pockets.
If a frog had pockets, he would carry a knife,
hey,
stab the snake,
hey,
before it ate it.
He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
What? What? How?
I have hijacked the show for this Friday, Ben, and there's nothing you can do about it. I am off all day Friday. I know we're recording this on a Thursday night, but this is like my Friday night, and I started going to work, and I'm like, I need some music, and I was like, man, Shannon Sharpe's Mild and Yak.
Yeah, definitely. When I think of music I need for my car ride, I think of a remix of something Shannon Sharpe said on, what's the show? First Take? Is that their show?
It's undisclosed.
Undisputed is their show.
Yeah,
right?
Undisclosed, Jesus. Yeah, I don't watch it, but I do think Shannon Sharpe is a national treasure that needs to be protected at all costs. Uh-huh.
You're going to hear no arguments from me in that regard.
All right, so let's get this thing on track. We'll recap some things real quick that we got going on over at LockedOnEagles.com. I just dropped an article about the Bang A spot concept married with a go flat concept that the Eagles got a red zone touchdown on. It was their first touchdown against the Bears. We talked about it on this show before, but this has got videos, diagrams, all types of breakdowns as far as that concept goes. So go check that out on LockedOnEagles.com. Ben just dropped an article about our offensive line and different run looks that we give and how the feet matter and what the defense is reading and how we're fooling them. It's an excellent article. Go check that out. Also want to remind you real quick to go to iTunes, rate, review, give us 5 stars, leave your Twitter handle in the review. That enters you to win a chance to win a free PFF Edge subscription. Okay, so we're going to get into another Seahawks-Eagles preview. Just me and Ben this time, but if you want to hear other people chime in on it, our Wednesday show has Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman from Locked On Seahawks. That was our crossover episode. And then yesterday from The Ringer, awesome guest Danny Kelly was on to help us preview it as well. So now it's just me and Ben, and we're going to kick it off right here. Okay, so today I'm scrolling through Twitter and I see that the amazing Fran Duffy released his film room work on the Seahawks in anticipation of this matchup. Did a really good job highlighting what the Seahawks do well. You're going to see shot plays from heavier personnel groups, whether two backs and a tight end or two tight ends and a running back with play action. Might be a scissors concept, Yankee or otherwise. They're going to go empty as well with no back in the backfield to try to get Graham or McKissick on a linebacker. The reason this is so tough for a defense is because you identify personnel based on who is in the huddle or on the field, not how they line up later. So you see Graham and McKissick in the huddle and you're thinking 11 personnel, which is one running back, one tight end. So you may counter with a nickel package. So two linebackers, which for us would be Kendricks and Bradham in most cases. But when they break the huddle and line up, you know, there's cases where you've got McKissick lined up outside, Graham in the slot now. So it becomes a matchup game. It also allows the Seahawks to get a pre-snap feel for what the coverage is. For instance, if you come out in four wide and then motion McKissick out to the outside, and let's say Bradham follows him, chances are you've just tipped your hand that it's man coverage. Also, how comfortable are you with Bradham covering a go route for McKissick? Or are you able to work through the trash if McKissick is in the slot and runs a wheel route on a scissors concept? And that's where things for me get really interesting. And speaking of working through the trash, we're also going to get the rub and pick routes from those empty sets from the Seahawks. So the Eagles are going to have to communicate effectively pre-snap to know their responsibility so they can either carry the right route or pass it off while picking up another route on a banjo switch. And again, you still got Graham in the slot. Who is covering? Is it Kendricks, Bradham? Is it Jenkins, or a combination of all three? And then if you're playing man, what are you doing to ensure that with the cover guys turning their backs to carry the routes, to make sure that Wilson isn't just going to gash you with his legs. So with the lack of a traditional run game, do we run more dime personnel with one linebacker and use Jenkins down in the box as a linebacker safety hybrid? Do we continue to dial up blitzes with zero coverage in the red zone despite Wilson's deadly connection with Graham against that type of defense? I know that's an incredibly wide net I just cast, Ben, but how do you expect our defense to be deployed in some of the aforementioned situations?
Let's start from the back and work our way to the front, right? I think that you've already seen them have a higher incidence of dime coverage with one backer, and then Jenkins there is a quasi back sort of. You know, sometimes it's Rodney McLeod as a single high safety. Maybe sometimes they bring in Corey Graham as the third safety. But you've seen dime personnel, regardless of how it's deployed, more often since the Jordan Hicks injury. That is something I think you can expect to see on the field again against Seattle on Sunday night, because it's nice to have speed on the field, like you said, against these empty packages where Seattle will go. They'll flex Jimmy Graham out wide. They'll flex JD McKissick out wide. Pretty sure JD McKissick is actually a wide receiver. I don't even think he's a running back. He's definitely not a very good running back. I can tell you that much. So I think you'll see a lot of that dime personnel, yes. Now, obviously, you're at the point with the Seattle offense where even though it doesn't have a consistent rushing attack, it's been very successful without so. And actually, it's interesting because oftentimes Eagle defense is so suffocating because it takes away your rushing attack, right? It's so good against running backs with the front seven that now you're made one-dimensional. Seahawks offense has already been successful one-dimensional, right? It's been successful that way all season. So it's very interesting that, you wonder how much... You know, you wonder if the Seahawks will find a little bit more success against the Eagles than most teams have because they're used to operating without a real running game. But, you know, focusing on what Seattle does, you're right. They manufacture a lot of rushing yards through Russell Wilson. What's to stop him from just running, you know, hog wild when you leave the middle of the field open, when you let him escape the pocket? And, you know, that's always the tricky part of a rushing quarterback. That's why they're so important. They're so versatile. They're so dangerous. The solution is always, when you're a defensive coordinator, I need to be able to rush with four or less, I would even say. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Philadelphia try to get pressure with three on certain third down situations on Sunday night. It's something that they haven't done so much this year. That's very, very rare for them. I don't think I've seen it at all on film whatsoever.
I think I saw them do it once, but it was more like a green dog with Barnett. That's when he affected the throw on deck. So they rushed three. They had long on contained, so he didn't have a two-way go. Barnett kind of hung back for a second, and then he had a green dog. So yeah, they'll do stuff like that.
Right. Which that can be one of two things. That could be green dog, or that can be Barnett just being very, very aware of what's going on and cutting his rush, right? So like anyway, a designed three-man rush, you know, like if we've seen it, we've seen it two times. And so Schwartz has shown this year a penchant for getting defensive linemen lined up where he wants to line them up. We talk about these one-on-one matchups that he can manufacture. You can do that with a three-man rush. You put five or six guys on the line of scrimmage, but you drop two or three of them back. Now you've got the one-on-one matchups that you want, but you're not rushing that many. And that allows you to play your basic zone coverages. That allows you to play man with safety on top, but it also allows you to leave a spy down in the middle of the field. I would expect, personally, it's Michael Kendricks, who's deployed as the spy. Leave Nigel Bradham as your primary cover linebacker. Malcolm Jenkins, like you said, potentially over Jimmy Graham or over JD McKissick as well. If you're working three safety sets, you leave McLeod, you leave Graham back. Kendricks is your guy who's going to be chasing Wilson left and right, and that's a good responsibility for Kendricks. He's got great closing burst, right? He's got excellent straight line speed, and so he can, if not even tackle Wilson, push him far enough to the sideline when he looks to break the pocket, then now he doesn't have as much of the field in which to operate, and it minimizes his yardage. That's how I'd expect the back seven to be deployed for Philadelphia. Name of the game: getting pressure with four. Shouldn't be a problem, but you got to be able to do it if you're going to stress a rushing quarterback.
Yeah, and Russell Wilson is going to be under pressure. I'm fairly certain that saying that is not a hot take. Some quick stats on that. Russell Wilson has been pressured 190 times. It's the highest in the league by 36, and that is a lot for those keeping count at home. On those pressure dropbacks, he has a completion percentage of 48%, 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions with 26 sacks. Now that sack number may seem high, which it is, but when you really look at it, that's only 13.7% of pressures result in sacks on Wilson, which is 6th lowest. So teams are getting to Wilson. His performance takes a sharp dip when they get to him, but he's also avoiding sacks. He also leads the league in throwaways, so he's been responsible with it for the most part. And he's a threat with his legs. And like you said, one player that likely plays a key role in containing Wilson is Michael Kendricks. And he's playing all three downs for us. He's had a fascinating career arc this year, and I'd say right now that he's at the pinnacle of his career as far as the way he's playing. You know, in three of the four metrics for PFF for off-ball linebackers, he's in the the lead for the Eagles, and that includes Jordan Hicks pre-injury. So in the preseason, he had some success with blitzing, and we thought maybe that was the only thing he was going to be able to do, but he's just all around. He's been excellent. So with this pass rush, I think we can honestly get there with three. I wouldn't be surprised if, honestly, Fletcher Cox could take on all five. That's how bad this line has been. You know, that's obviously a little bit, you know, over the top or whatever, but yeah, I don't think it's going to be an issue. So as we were talking about yesterday with Danny Kelly, real quick, would you expect to see some more zone coverage to kind of keep things in front, or are we going to task more of that with Michael Kendricks as kind of like a spy almost?
Either one can work. Depends on the way you want to play it. Gun to my head, I think they'll start with man and the spy with Kendricks, because they fully believe that they can stop your rushing attack if you're Seattle with very light personnel. There's no reason to believe otherwise. If Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham are all on the field, Seattle should not be able to run the football with a running back very well, period. And so that allows you to play your more traditional man with a spy. If that goes poorly, then you could see them transfer to more zone coverages, which would allow them to get beefier linebackers onto the field. So you could see that potentially. I think they'll start with man, but if they come out going zone the entire way, that's also perfectly fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. So let's flip it over, because really there's no need to talk about the Seattle run game. It is not existent. We talked about it. It's Russell Wilson scrambling around. That's basically what it is. So with the Eagles offense against the Seahawks defense, one of the key matchups for me is Jason Kelce against Sheldon Richardson, and in some cases, Jerron Reed. So both Richardson and Reed are tied for ninth in the league when it comes to interior defenders achieving run stops, with 17 apiece for a 10.8 run stop percentage. That's excellent. Richardson has amassed 22 pressures on the year, although he's only converted one of those into a sack. Flip side, Kelce is having his best year as a pro in regard to run blocking. He ranks 22nd out of 29th among qualifying centers in regards to pass blocking efficiency, giving up two sacks and 18 pressures. Ben, who do you have winning this matchup, and what phases do you think one or the other one wins, or if it's a push, and why?
I have Kelce winning everything, and here's why. He's not losing. He's not losing all year, Mike. And that's right. The thing right now is, and you know, kind of beat it to death at this point. This Seattle defensive line, very good. It's a very talented defensive line. It's their best unit currently on the field with all the injuries that they've had to their secondary. It was one of the biggest reasons after that Sheldon Richardson trade that I picked them to go to the Super Bowl. But there is not a unit playing better than the Eagles offensive line, period. And you know, that's been a take that since week 5, week 6 for me, right? And nothing about the past 30 point performances have made me, you know, switch my opinion there. Yeah, Kelce's a little bit undersized, right? And he will get moved around in pass protection. When you have a quarterback like Carson Wentz, you sleep at night, though. He's not a statue. Well, he can be a statue in the pocket. That's not true. He has escapability, right? If he feels like he needs to use it, he can use it. He's not sluggish, right? You know, he got those Big Ben comparisons. You remember those, right? Because Big Ben, they'll be nonsense around the pocket. They'll be trash at his feet. And Ben will just stand there like a rock. And people will hit him, and he'll just kind of bounce around. And then he'll unleash a bomb all arm strength, and it'll be amazing. That's where the Ben comparison came.
Did you see the clip where they were in training camp? This is from a few years back, and they're doing this drill with Bruce Gradkowski, and they're doing like pocket maneuverability, like subtle shifts in the pocket, and they're throwing these like blocking pads at Bruce Gradkowski, and he's taking these little small steps, subtle stuff, so on and so forth. And Ben gets down there, and he drops back, and Ben, as the blocking pads are being thrown at him, is just chucking them out of the way with the ball in his hand, and then launches a bomb.
now in memory of John Gruden, he is a two-handed monster in this clip, if I remember correctly. He's got both of his hands on the ball.
Yes.
It's there in the resting position for the quarterback, but he's taken with both hands, just swinging at the blocks as they come. I remember this. Right. Ben's a brute force in the pocket. Carson's got the escapability. And so when you have a guy like Jason Kelce who can get moved around a little bit in pass protection, when I say moved around, I mean displaced. He's not getting beat clean off the line. He's just getting, they're pushing the depth of the pocket a little bit. Carson has no problem dealing with that. And so, you know, maybe that'll affect Kelce's PFF grade, but it doesn't affect the execution of the offense as far as what we've seen, you know. Like, take a look at Carson's touch on Zach Ertz, like the one that you broke down. He was getting nailed by Halapalavati-Vaitai, who was getting manhandled, right, by whatever defensive end was up against him. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, like, you know, Carson has the ability to deliver those balls off platform in a dirty pocket. It's not a problem. And so I don't foresee the Seahawks defensive line, despite its talent, being any bigger of an issue than, say, we've seen week to week. I mean, like, the only defensive line that really caused a problem on its own was San Francisco's, which kind of came out of nowhere, right? They were just doing a lot of cool nonsense. Actually, I just read a breakdown on that. It's very interesting. Nice. And then the Panthers generated a lot of pressure with blitzes, but that wasn't their front four. right? Mm. That was a lot of different looks, a lot of different guys coming off edges, sending a lot of linebackers, sending safeties. And so for me, you know, despite the talent on the Seahawks line, there's no reason as of right now to believe that Philadelphia won't be able to handle it. I ain't touching what ain't broke. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Okay, so let's get into the passing game aspect of it since you hinted at it. Zach Ertz is likely to draw a good deal of coverage from Bradley McDougald and Bobby Wagner. I have a couple questions centered around Bobby Wagner for you. Before that, I'll say Bobby Wagner ranks top five in the league in all four of PFF's off-ball linebacker metrics. That's coverage, which is yards per route run, run stop percentage, tackling efficiency, and pass rush productivity. And then you take a quick look at some of the other matchups before we dig into Wagner. Alshon Jeffrey will see Shaq Griffin in coverage. I'd say that's advantage Jeffrey. Torrey Smith will be matched up with Jeremy Lane. I would probably give that one to Lane. Nelson Aguilar will see plenty of nickel corner Justin Coleman. I'd be tempted to call that a push, but I'd lean slightly to Aguilar. There's a couple ways we could deal with Wagner in the passing game, and I'm interested to hear your opinion on this. We can avoid him and work more vertically and to the perimeter, or we can attack the middle of the field by putting him in conflict by way of spacing concepts and others where he's the force defender, essentially, or the defender that Wentz is reading first and then making decisions based off him. What do you think we might see from that?
If I'm looking right now at this defense, without the first thing I'm doing is I'm testing McDougal in the middle in Cam Chancellor's role. That's priority number one. You got a guy not only was in his first start coming off the bench, but is replacing a Cam Chancellor player. That's where I'm going right away, right? And so in Philadelphia,
are you doing that with Ertz by alignment and trying to avoid Bobby Wagner?
Right. So I would say so. I would say that already a lot of Philadelphia's offense runs through that middle of the field, you know, 10 to 15 yards kind of down, which is where you might see Cam have his greatest impact as a robber in the cover three. You remember, you've got Earl Thomas as one safety, Cam Chancellor as the other, and they'll play that cover three robber system where Earl Thomas then becomes the single high, and Chancellor can go rove around in the middle of the field at about a depth of 12 yards, maybe 10 yards, and that's where Chancellor's really dangerous. If you remember, Carson threw a pick against Seattle last year where Cam Chancellor took a dig straight out from under him, right? That dig route goes straight into the cover three robber zone. Chancellor was sitting in there. Carson didn't see him. Now, Carson's been much better looking off middle of the field safeties this year, and obviously no more Cam Chancellor. So that's where I'm testing right away, most definitely. Now, right, when it comes to particularly avoiding Bobby Wagner, if they're dropping him further back into the middle of the field now that Cam's not there, which I don't anticipate them doing, like we talked about with Danny, we think they're still going to deploy their same coverage shell, just with different personnel. If that's the case, the Eagles should have the advantage on the outside with Jeffrey and with Aguilar in the slot as well, in my opinion, over some of these corners. I think Philadelphia will have, you know, this secondary is depleted. Right, the two main starters, two of the best players in the secondary are gone, and they were already leaking talent from the Legion of Boom that we knew from a few years ago. Right, the secondary, it's not playing very well, Mike. There's no way around it, and so the Eagles should have their pick of the, you know, they should be able to pick their poison in the passing attack on Sunday night.
So the other question around Wagner was, and Brandon Lee Gowton posted this for Bleeding Green Nation. He asked if you could steal one Seahawks player. Yes. I'm going to narrow it down for you. I'm going to take Russ out of the equation, and I'm going to put it between Doug Baldwin and Bobby Wagner. Who
it's
you
Bobby
taking?
Wagner. Yeah. I would take Bobby Wagner over Russ.
Woo!
I'll put it to you this way. Russ plays. Russ is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz right now. Absolutely, he is. I think that within a couple of years, they're likely in the same tier. You know, I think you could probably make an argument for it now. I would definitely still take Russ over it, as a matter of fact. But in a couple years, they're in the same tier, sure. Bobby Wagner is one of the top two linebackers in the NFL. And also, if memory serves, I don't have his durability. I don't have the games that he's missed. But I'm pretty sure he does not miss very many reps.
Yeah, I don't remember him missing many, many games at all. But yeah, that Ben might be on that mile than that yak with that take there, taking a linebacker over what could be. I mean, okay, I'll put it to you this way then. If Russ pulls this game off against the Eagles, hypothetically, and he does his normal production, which is like 89% of the offense or whatever it is, does that put him in the MVP conversation, considering how little he has to work with around on the offense with no run game?
All right, so number one, Wagner's actually only put forward like two 16-game seasons. He's had a 14-game, 11-game, 15-game. Like, you know, he's been...
Oh, like one or two here or there, but that's not much, other than the 11-game one.
So he's been relatively durable. Obviously, it'd be nicer to see some more 16-game seasons. But that's Wagner. If we're talking about Russ as an MVP, I got crucified on Twitter for saying that Russ... is a better MVP candidate than Carson Wentz right now.
Oh,
right. Okay. I said that a couple of weeks ago when I was saying that it was after the Dallas game, I believe, when I said that performance against Dallas typifies my argument that Doug Peterson has a stronger case for Coach of the Year than Carson does MVP.
Right.
And some people are very upset with me, understandably so. And they said, well, who's MVP if not Carson? And I said, Tom Brady, as it is every year and as it should be this year as well, because he's playing amazing. And they said, okay, it's not going to be Brady. They're going to be somebody different. I said, I think Russell Wilson deserves more notice. And I said, especially if Seattle makes a playoff run, which that's kind of what it's predicated on. We talked about this way in the beginning of the year. MVP is about storylines. It's not about performance. It's about narratives. So if Seattle makes it to the playoffs, I think you'll hear Russ's case get a lot hotter. You know, that game against Los Angeles, let's say he shows out in that game and they win the division because of that game. Now we got a conversation. So, no, I think that Russ is very deserving to be in the MVP conversation. If you're asking me which player do I take with which to start a franchise, obviously I'm taking the quarterback.
Right,
but right now, to fit in Philadelphia, Bobby Wagner, no question. You can put him up against almost anybody in that roster. Maybe not Earl Thomas, but Bobby Wagner, I think, is up there.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's dig into this before we go. We'll do one more round of predicting the game with the over-under, the spread. I know you wanted to talk yesterday. You said that you wanted to talk about the over and the under. So let's do score predictions first, and then we'll get into why you think it's going to be the over, because I want you to sell me on it, because it'll depending on if you sell me on it or not, I'll make my bet with mybookie.ag for the over or the under. Yeah. So I'm gonna put this one at, let's see here. I'm gonna put it at 21-17 Philadelphia. So under and cover for the Seahawks. What about you?
So 21-17. I'll tell you why I'm not sure if I'm gonna put money on this, but if I'm putting money on anything on this game, it's the over, and here's why. Seattle, 7-4 this year. They've only hit the over four times, but three of those overs have come in home games this year. They're 3-2 in the over instead of the under. What I'm saying is this: the lines are overset for Seattle at home. This defense has not played the way that it has played in recent years, but Vegas line setters are still assuming that it is. And so when Seattle's playing at home, the line, the overall point line, the total gets taken down, right? Too far, because Seattle's not scoring significantly more points per game than they are away. It's simply the fact that, number one, the defense isn't playing as well as Vegas line setters think that they are, and so the line's coming down. And then, number two, good offenses are doing damage in Seattle. The noise isn't as effective. It's not as crippling as it once was, because you know what it is coming in. And we know that the Philadelphia offense has built in ways to get the signal off without vocal sounds. Like, you know, we know that they have non-vocal cues to snap the ball, so it's not as much of a problem. The reality is that Seattle's 12-man defense isn't as much of a problem in the line as it has been. That's what the numbers are telling me personally. You couple 3-2 over at home, three of their four overs coming at home, with the fact that the Eagles have now scored 30 plus points in like 85 straight games or whatever the ridiculous stat is. I think we're at the point where you got a depleted secondary there in Seattle, and you've got Russell Wilson playing heroic football in the fourth quarter. If this thing is still within two and a half scores come fourth quarter time, I expect Seattle to then make a push to make a run, because they're a good team that does that. That's going to push it over the over for me. So I personally, again, I think that Philadelphia is going to break 30 again, no problem. I think that Seattle will push and get close. I'm going to take 34-28. Give me Philadelphia.
Okay. All right, I think you've changed my mind. So if I am extremely mad at Ben, come our reaction show, you know exactly why.
Did you notice, though, I was very, very distinct. I took 34-28, which is exactly on the line for the point spread. That's exactly plus six for Seattle, because I'm not touching that line. So I took perfect cover. I took a straight push there, 34-28. But if I'm touching anything, right, I'm touching the over.
Gotcha. Okay. So if I bet that the Seahawks will cover, then that's completely on me. But I still got you on the hook for the over-under. We'll see how that goes. Ben, we're heading into this weekend, man. You got anything else for the gentle listeners?
Nothing particularly that I can think of. I mean, get excited. This is the prove it section, man. This is the final test. This is big. Get through this, stay healthy, win these two games on the West Coast, and then just, slide on into that first seed, baby.
Get hot going into the playoffs, and make sure you keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Caw-caw!
Let me celebrate!